Following broadcast of Sioux Valley Voice was recorded earlier. You'll not be able to call in during the next hour. This and all past episodes of Sioux Valley Voice are available online anytime at ktna.org. You're listening to KTNA 88.9 FM, Talkeetna, streaming from ktna.org. I'm Philip Manning, and this is Sioux Valley Voice. Our topic today is domestic violence. Alaska has a very high rate of both intimate partner and sexual violence. My guests today are Cece Schoenberger and Kirsten Stroll from the Sunshine Community Health Center. We'll be discussing the current state of domestic violence prevention and taking your calls. The number to call if you want to join the conversation is 733-1200, or you can send an email to dj@ktna.org. Cece, Kirsten, thank you for joining me this morning.
Well, thank you for having us.
So, maybe get a little bit closer to the mic, sorry. Okay. So to get us started, I touched on it in the intro, but I think it's a fairly well-known fact at this point that Alaska does have very high rates of domestic violence, be that intimate partner violence, sexual violence, or other types of that are classified as domestic violence, like between family members, things like that. What are the current trends as far as where those numbers are at?
Well, Kirsten? I was looking at the University of Alaska's website, and it was saying that 48 out of 100 people in Alaska will experience intimate partner violence over their lifetime. 37 out of 100 will experience sexual violence, and 59 out of 100 will experience either intimate partner violence, sexual violence, or both.
Okay.
So it's pretty high. I think it's like double the national average.
Yeah, that's incredibly high. And mm-hmm. So that number suggests that there is a fair bit of overlap there too, because it was like 48 and 37 and then 59 total. So that means there's a significant portion of the population that experience both.
Mm-hmm. Yes, there is.
So is there, and that's, I think I remember seeing that study last year from UAA that you're referencing there. And, they broke that out by community as well. And pretty much every part of the state had, there was a little bit of variation, but I think pretty much every region of the state had numbers that didn't deviate too much from that norm. So it's not like, because what I've heard sometimes, whenever stories like this come up, when you read the comments section of, ADN, things like that, which I never advise, but when you do, what you end up hearing are things like, oh, well, this is happening in Native villages. This is a Native problem. Does that bear out at all?
I think it's too, I don't know the statistics, so I couldn't tell you, but I think people tend to think of it more as a city problem. Mm. So Anchorage and Wasilla and maybe Juneau, the cities, that have more of an issue, or the remote, Native villages. People tend to think about, okay, we're such a nice community, we're just such a close knit, just very nice people here. It can't really be happening to us. It's really all of them out there.
Mm. Yeah. And I also think with like Talkeetna, there's a bit more barriers to going and getting help because you have to go down to Wasilla if you wanted to do like a sexual assault response team. Mm. So there's just we're a little bit more isolated in some ways. So I think it's easier to believe it's happening somewhere else than to our neighbor.
Right. Even though we're on the road system. Yeah, we are a fair distance away from the big population centers in South Central. So, okay. well, let's mention, we just ended Domestic Violence Awareness Month, which is October. And Cece, I know when we were scheduling this, we didn't have the October slot ready, but then you and I were talking about it and said, well, really, it's kind of appropriate to do a show outside of Domestic Violence Awareness Month.
Mm-hmm. Because I think, you know, again, you know, our purpose is to say this doesn't stop. You know, this is here, you know, and it happens year round. And somebody just as we, you know, before we were coming on the air, made a comment, oh, we're coming into the holiday season. And I think that's really important to note that, you know, yes, the numbers do have a tendency to increase with the holiday season. We always, you know, I mean, there's been so much written about holidays and, you know, celebration and times of enjoyment, but it is a very difficult time of year for many, many people.
Right. Well, there's a lot of things that, you know, there is a flip side to that coin as well. I mean, you always hear about increases in suicides during the holidays, alcohol consumption, drug consumption, things like that. And those are two factors that can play into domestic violence as well.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
So let's talk a little bit about education, because this is something, you know, when I was growing up, when I was in high school, you did get some domestic violence. More what was focused on more when I was in high school was sexual violence education. And this may be unique to where I grew up or even my school, but the emphasis was very much on prevention by avoidance, I guess would be the right way to put it. So teaching, you know, mostly girls to avoid a situation where you could be putting yourself at risk. But at the same time, there's been some criticism over in recent years over, well, why aren't we teaching young men and young women how not to engage in this type of behavior to begin with? Is that starting to become more of the norm where we're teaching people not to be abusive as opposed to teaching people to avoid?
I would hope so. I think so. I think, you know, a lot of people are starting to see only teaching girls is kind of a way of putting the blame on the victim themselves instead of putting the blame on the perpetrator.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I think that there's a recognition that when you teach the behavior, you know, both teach and model the behavior that you want to enhance, that has a much better opportunity for learning as opposed to, you know, well, don't do this, you know,
okay.
Because now you've got that in your brain and you really want to emphasize the positive behavior,
okay.
You know, because that's how people learn. So I would agree with you. I think that while the efforts were laudable, you know, to really try to work with people about avoiding that, you know, we've learned a lot from that.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't agree with Kirsten more that, you know, we want to not blame the victim. You know,
right.
We've talked about that before, that, you know, so often our systems are set up to blame the victim. And we really want to get away from that.
Right. Right. Well, and along those lines, Cece, you just mentioned something that we talked about a little bit before we came on air, which is that shift toward emphasizing positive behaviors as opposed to emphasizing not doing the negative behavior. Because, I mean, I think what comes to mind when you say that is it's kind of the red button syndrome, right?
Mm-hmm.
Don't push the red button.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to providing examples of what the positive behavior is. So can you know, let's talk a little bit about how that works. What sort of things are there to help people, young people and even adults, I guess, you know, learn, model, and demonstrate those positive behaviors? Kirsten?
I think one of the things that I've been really interested in lately is I've noticed that a lot of my friends from Anchorage are posting about the Green Dot campaign.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started looking at the website and trying to figure out what is this Green Dot campaign. And I think one of the things that I find really interesting about it is that it kind of celebrates really simple interventions, you know, just asking someone, are you okay? Are you safe? Or going up, you know, or just putting it on your Facebook that, you know, the local domestic violence shelter information, or it just gives people really simple ways to kind of intervene. And that allows, you know, kind of this flow of positivity into the community. And as a community, changing our norms around violence, it doesn't have to be some huge intervention where you're like putting yourself in danger or anything. It's just really simple everyday things that you feel comfortable doing.
Okay.
Kirsten, you had a great example of that. Would you like to share what you did? I just feel that I've talked a lot about giving a voice to the victim, and sometimes that's their own voice and teaching them how to speak, but sometimes it's lending your voice. And Kirsten had a great example of something that she did.
One of my first trips up to Talkeetna, we were down by the river watching the northern lights, mm-hmm. and there were some teenagers having a party in the woods, and someone started shooting a gun, and then there were teenagers spilling out of the woods, and there was a girl that was crying, and, you know, I went up and I asked her, are you okay? You know, is anyone hurt? What's going on? And I could tell that she was heavily intoxicated. So I asked her, how are you getting home tonight? You know, who are you going to be safe going home tonight? And a friend came up and he said he was taking her home. And I asked what his name was. And I asked him if he was going to take her straight home and if he was a safe person to take her home, and just kind of tried to help and assess the situation. And then once I made sure she was off and okay, then I called the police to report the shooting too, which I just felt like, you know, I'm a fairly shy person. I, you know, even coming to the radio is a little hard for me, but, you know, in the moment, it was something that I could do. I wouldn't have ran into the woods and confronted the person with a gun or anything like that, because that would have put myself in danger. But I could help one person. I could ask her if she was okay, why she was crying. You know, it's just that simpleness of just caring about people in your community.
You don't have to put on the cape.
No. No.
But I think that's a really good example that so many times we get caught up in the, we don't want to get involved, we don't want to interfere, you know, we don't want to, you know, make a situation worse, you know, what if something happens? And we second guess ourselves all the time. And, you know, and I think that that is exactly what we're talking about is, you know, when you see something that's questionable, or, you know, even if there hadn't been any gun shooting, there was a young woman who appeared to be unsafe, and just asking her, you know, are you okay? And that's perfectly acceptable. I mean, she might get angry and scream and yell and swear. Okay, fine. But we haven't hurt anything by asking if she's okay. Nothing. I have lost nothing if I do that. Okay. And I think there are many, many people that do that. But I think what we're trying to do is to really give global permission to people to do that, you know, because I think it's important.
Well, like you were talking about earlier, the norming, making that the norm, is that the idea?
Right. So what I was talking about, you know, before we went on air was just this concept of social norming, which has to do with the idea that, you know, the statistics are pretty bleak, mm-hmm. you know. So even if we take a look at the idea that 59% of women are going to report either domestic violence or sexual violence in their lifetime. That is a horrendous figure. That is huge. We really need to pay attention to it. But we also need to pay attention to the fact that 41% of people will not experience it. And what were some of the factors in their lives that protected them? Mm. So we want to look at, you know, both the risk factors and the protective factors. We want to look at, you know, the fact that while, you know, there was 37% of something. I can't remember which one it was.
That was the sexual violence.
You know, again, my math is not going to be really good, so that must be 60 some odd.
63.
Yes, thank you. Percent. You know, that's not going to happen to. Again, what are some of the things that kept them safe? You know, what are some of the differences? Again, that's not blaming the victim. Well, you couldn't keep yourself safe. You got yourself into this terrible situation. But it's really looking at what are the things that we're doing well that keeps 63% of people safe in some ways.
Okay? Well, obviously part of that is the behavior of the people around them.
Mm-hmm.
Is part of that factor too, then.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay. Well, we'll take a break here to let everybody know if you want to join the conversation, the number to call 733-1200 or send us an email, dj at ktna.org. We do have an email question. I'm not sure how well we'll be able to answer this, but it was about the closing of the trooper station here. There used to be a trooper station right there by Moore's.
Mm-hmm.
How is the closing of the trooper station going to impact response to domestic violence situations, especially when it requires police intervention? Now, you're not law enforcement experts, but, I mean, has there, since that's happened, I mean, has there been a change?
I don't know the answer to that question.
I'm not sure either, but, you know, I would anticipate that the response time could be longer,
right,
just because they may be farther away from this area. And, you know, I'm just not
sure. It's hard to say. Like I said, I'm not.
Well, I think we all anticipate, you know, I think that's why there was so much concern about this,
right,
is, you know, the closing of the trooper station. No, I mean, the reality is, even when the trooper station was there, there is a much, much longer than optimal time of response. I mean, just even if somebody was sitting there when a call came in, the minimal time from the trooper station to downtown Talkeetna is, you know, I mean, 15 minutes if they're going, you know, top speed,
right,
you know. So bad things can happen,
right,
in 15 minutes.
Well, and I think something, too, to add there is that the troopers, the police, that's who's there after something has happened.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I think we've been talking a lot about prevention and preventing the need for that, and you'll never eliminate it entirely, I don't believe, but just the efforts on how to prevent that.
Well, I think, too, with them closing, you know, like you said, they come after the situation. I think with them being closed, it makes safety planning really important. You know, if someone is planning to leave, leaving is the most dangerous time for that person. So, you know, calling their local shelter, which for us would be Alaska Family Services, or, you know, even I can help with some safety planning at the clinic, and just having a really good thought out plan so that when they do leave, they're able to get to that shelter without having more barriers in between, you know, and having, you know, like a bag packed and ready to go.
Right.
And just really thinking it out so that they're leaving in the safest way possible will be even more important now that we don't have a trooper station.
Okay. Well, let's talk about that a little bit more, because I know that, you know, one of the things that it's difficult sometimes for people to leave an abusive situation, but for many people, you know, there's a last straw, there's whatever, that, and eventually they decide, okay, I've got to get out of here, maybe for myself, maybe for my kids, what have you. And so once somebody comes to that decision, you touched on it a little bit, but what do they need to do?
I would really encourage them to either give me a call at the clinic or calling Alaska Family Services, just so they can think it out with an advocate. You know, I would encourage them to have a safe word with a friend, you know, like purple shoes, and that means call the police just in case something happens before they're able to leave. Having the really important documents packed and hidden in a safe place so that, you know, if the person is away at work or wherever, that they're able to access that quickly and leave. And I would encourage them to have a plan on where they're going and how they're getting there.
And that people at the other end are expecting them.
Yes, exactly. That they know they're coming and that there's space for them, either in Wasilla or Anchorage, if they're going there.
Well, I also, what occurs to me is, you know, we've always, you know, emphasized having, you know, some kind of, you know, bag with, you know, important papers and a change of clothes or something like that. You know, what occurs to me that's a little bit easier now. We've talked a whole lot because of the fires.
Natural disasters.
And, you know, earthquakes and whatever, a lot about having a go bag.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that if families are getting used to the idea of having a go bag.
Mm-hmm.
So the more that you can just make it a natural part of what families do for preparedness, then it doesn't have to be quite as much of a secret.
It won't seem out of the ordinary.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, I mean, sometimes that's not possible,
right,
for the spouse that's being abused because there's so much control. But I think the more that it can be normalized and say, this is what we just need to be prepared, you
right,
know, just in case. You just can't tell, well, you know, what's going to happen.
That's an interesting point on how other types of preparedness can tie in as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, because I remember, you know, after the 2012 flood, we were running PSAs on this station for months about having a go bag and getting it. So that's an interesting point.
Mm-hmm.
So outside of, you know, what we've been talking about the last few minutes is the point where the person who is on the receiving end of the abuse, whatever form it may be taking, you know, they're done, they're getting out. But as we've kind of referenced, there's often a period before that where mm-hmm. you're either trying to change the situation or not ready to leave. For people who might be in that situation, what advice do you have for them? Kirsten?
That's a good one.
I mean, I guess, you know, it varies case by case,
it does. And it does take on average 7 times to leave for good. So it is pretty normal. You know, one of the things I always encouraged people to do when I worked at STAR is not to fight in the kitchen, because there's a lot of weapons in the kitchen. Don't fight in, you know, if there's a explosive incident, you don't want to put yourself where there's a lot of easy weapons, or bathrooms tend to be a bad place too, because there's no second exit.
Right.
So if you are finding yourself in an explosive incident, it's best to try to put yourself in a position where you have access to a way out of the building. And if you know, like, where there are weapons, not to go in those rooms either, and just try to, you know, there is some harm reduction
mitigation
that you can try. Yeah.
The other thing is, you know, beginning to talk about it. So when you visit a family physician, when you, you know, come into the clinic, you can, for whatever reason, so you're going in for, you know, a sore throat,
mm-hmm.
you know, mention it to your doctor, mention it to your provider. You know, say, ask if you can talk to Kirsten, who is always in the Talkeetna clinic, or talk to Shannon, who's always in the Willow clinic. Maybe not always, but pretty much. You know, I'm back and forth. I'm not necessarily the easiest person to talk to, but if I'm available, certainly I can be interrupted. But it takes a lot of courage to be able to verbalize it for the first time and to say, this is what's happening to me. We're getting better in family practice offices, not just the clinic, but at asking questions, mm-hmm. you know, about it. So, you know, it's going to stay there. It's going to stay with you and your provider. This is not something that can be talked about, but it's the beginning of talking about something and making some plans. You know, it's not about a provider or somebody at the clinic or somebody else saying, oh, you know, that's terrible, you need to leave right now. You know, that's not the most helpful advice.
Right.
You know, we need to talk about, you know, what are some of the other kinds of plans and things that are going to happen, you
right.
know, to get a person to that point. So that's another piece, but it's, you know, I keep through the years, I think one of my biggest messages is this is such a silent crime and we need to give voice. You know, whether it is the person who is experiencing the abuse or somebody who suspects it, you know, give voice to it, talk about it. And I think that's what Kirsten was talking about with whether we call it a Green Dot campaign or whether we just, you know, call it something different here in our community, mm-hmm. is, you know, noticing the positive and, you know, saying something, you know, noticing what you can do, the little things.
Okay. And so, but giving voice not only to the negative and things that, but to the positive side as well.
Mm-hmm. 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 You know, so for example, you know, when you notice, so Kirsten noticed a group of kids mm-hmm. that was behaving in a negative way,
mm-hmm.
you know, intoxication, you know, shooting off guns, very dangerous, obviously negative. You know, as she said, she wasn't going to go in and start pointing the finger and saying, you know, you stop that, you know. But on the other hand, if we noticed a group of kids that was down at the beach, you know, having a really good time and just, you know, not necessarily, you know, intoxicated, using, you know, you can notice that, you know, whether you notice it to them directly or whether you notice, you know, say something to their parents and, you know, so notice good things happening, acknowledge them. You know, it's, you know, we tend to really emphasize the negative
instead of a punitive, more of a supportive mentality.
You know, and it doesn't have to be a big deal. You know, wow, that looks like a lot of fun. You know, great to see you guys having fun.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sort of picking on kids at this point, but it certainly you can, you know, do that any time. Right. But, you know, I mean, kids might sort of downplay it and go, ugh. You know, but on the other hand, they do notice,
right.
They do pay attention when they get that positive, you know, feedback, you know, so, you know, acknowledge when you see people doing good things.
Yeah.
You know, no matter what it is, we like to be acknowledged for our good things.
Yeah, for sure.
and in general, I mean, it's not necessarily true, but a lot of times we expect that people are going to do the right thing, so we don't say anything.
Right. And we do tend to, I mean, there's, you know, there's always the, not quite true, but there's always the old adage about the news, right?
Mm-hmm.
If it bleeds, it leads.
Yes.
And while, excuse me, while that's not strictly true, you do tend to see negative things brought to the fore, either whether it be in news or just, you know, the talk around town, that sort of thing. We do tend to emphasize the negative. That's a very interesting, I guess, one example that a somewhat related example is the issue of policing mm-hmm. in the United States. You know, there's a big issue right now with closely scrutinizing what the police are doing, but we don't tend to give as much airtime to the positive things
mm-hmm.
that police officers are doing in communities. We do, it's happening on social media now,
mm-hmm.
but that's kind of a new thing, I think. Mm-hmm. So it's same idea, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Right. And I think it's a very important one. And I think that's been a criticism for so long is that, you know, the things that get the headlines. And I mean, it's understandable. Yes, that's, you know, we are reporting on the, oh, my goodness, what's happening now, you know, but. And there has been some effort over the years to have those positive news stories.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I can't remember all the, because I haven't had TV in so long, I have no idea what's going on TV. But I just remember years ago that Sunday morning there was some show about Across America, and mm-hmm. he would have these stories about some of the wonderful things that, you know, was happening, you know, across America, you know, and the more that we have that, the more we can say, well, you know, yeah, good things are happening.
So taking that and bringing it to a personal level, as opposed to relying on people from outside to report on it or to exhibit it,
mm-hmm.
that you can, as an individual, mm-hmm. even if it's just to that other person, recognize what they're doing, if there's a positive impact going on there.
Well, you know, and another example, the totally unrelated to the domestic violence issue, but I think, as people know, I'm sort of involved in recycling. so another hat that I wear. But, you know, somebody talked about having a mug that can be used over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so one of my comments was, you know, gee, what we should do is to do a community survey to find out what are all the green things that are actually happening in this town. You know, we might criticize, oh, that place is using plastic, you know, mm-hmm. throwaway things, or this place is doing this or whatever. But if we did, you know, looked at, well, but what are the good things that are happening? You know, and I think we can do the same thing, you know, I don't know, what are your thoughts on that, Kirsten? How we could do that in a more formal way? Any thoughts?
You know, yeah. One of the things that I really liked at one of the last STAR Sexual Assault
mm-hmm.
Awareness Months when they had the opening is that for a few months before, they opened it up to the community and they said, nominate people that you feel like have safely intervened. And so all these positive stories started coming to light, and they actually acknowledged like 3 or 4 people that had done amazing, amazing things. And, you know, it was just a really interesting spin on the whole opening ceremony, because a lot of times it tends to be like this really negative and this really, you know, sad and scary topic for people. And it was able to put a positive face on it. Yeah. And I think that, you know, even if we did that in Taukina, having people nominate, you know, positive stories of people helping out or people intervening, I think, you know, that's a way for us to acknowledge the good things happening in our community and the light.
Yeah, it's an interesting idea. Well, we are now to the bottom of the hour, so we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, to continue our discussion on domestic violence. If you want to join in the second half of the show, the number to call, 733-1200, or you can send us an email, dj@ktna.org. We'll be right back. Back. You're listening to Sioux Valley Voice on KTNA 88.9 FM Talkeetna, streaming from ktna.org. I'm Philip Manning. My hosts today are Cece Schoenberger and Kirsten Stroll from the Sunshine Community Health Center. We've been discussing domestic violence. We've just ended Domestic Violence Awareness Month, but it is unfortunately something that happens year-round, not just while we have an official campaign around it. So during the break, we were talking a little bit, and Kirsten, one of the things you said in the first half hour, actually before we get into that, if you want to join the conversation, the number is 733-1200, or you can send us an email, dj@ktna.org. So like I was saying, during the first half, one of the things you said that really struck me was that on average, takes 7 incidents before somebody leaves an abusive situation. And I assume this has to do with intimate partner violence. But yeah. 7 times. But so I guess in my thought process went to, if somebody's in that situation and this has happened 3 or 4 times and they haven't been willing to make that leap and to leave, that there might be some self-doubt, some self-imposed blame and guilt that goes in there too, but it's turns out it's not unusual.
No, it's very normal. And I think part of it is, you know, how domestic violence goes is, you know, it's not like on the first date someone is gonna physically harm you.
Sure.
So it's a process. It's a slow process, and you know, it takes, you know, a lot of courage to be able to leave, because a lot of times your finances are now dependent on each other. You know, all your stuff is in the same house. It's difficult to have to separate your life from someone else under the best of circumstances.
Right.
And so when you're facing violence, there's also a lot of self-blaming, like, I should have known before it ever started. I should have done this. I should have done that. And you know, there's a lot of shame around it. I don't want to tell my family. I don't want to tell my doctor, because they're, you know, it's somewhat blaming yourself that it's happening, and it's absolutely not their fault. And, you know, there are a lot of resources available for when they are ready to leave, but it is ultimately their decision, mm-hmm. and there are people able to help them. It takes a lot to get to that point where you're ready and able and you have a plan to leave. It's not as simple as, why don't you just go now? Mm-hmm. So, you know, and we're able to offer some support at the clinic, and Alaska Family Services can definitely offer a lot of support. They have a shelter that's available. I think 40% of all women who leave end up using a shelter at some point.
Okay.
So,
well, I'd also, you know, like to just tack on a couple of things. One is that it's not just physical abuse that we're talking mm-hmm. about here. So we're talking about, you know, a period and of time in which there has been verbal and emotional abuse. So a person's, you know, oftentimes it's their self-confidence, it's their sense of self that has really been battered down. So the battering is not just the body, it's the mind and the spirit. You know, so, you know, sometimes it's directly, you know, you're stupid, you're good for nothing, you can never, why can't you ever do anything right? You know, I mean, those are the blatant, and then there are much more subtle kinds of messages, you know, and so this goes on for a period of time, and it may never get to physical violence. But if you're feeling that you are capable of doing nothing outside of your partner, then that's not a good situation. We don't want people to do that. Partnerships are partnerships. Hmm. It's two people working together for a common goal. So, you know, that doesn't mean one person controlling and belittling another person. And, you know, quite honestly, it's not usually just a one-way street. It goes both ways. So you're involved in, you know, what I often refer to as a dance. And it is not a happy dance, you know. So I think it's important to understand it, sort of getting out of and breaking free of those messages,
right.
You know. So that's, I think, for all of the reasons that Kirsten said, plus the way that you're thinking about yourself, you don't necessarily see a life that's possible, you know, outside of what you've got now. And you come to believe, well, this is what I deserve.
And so it takes some time to potentially come around to that point. And that's, again, totally normal.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So, you know, the other part that we definitely want to talk about is when a person is ready. Kirsten has talked about, you know, using the shelter, which we don't have here in Talkeetna, but some people will say, but I can't get to Wasilla. You know, I don't have a car. I don't have any money, whatever. There is a fund. And the Family in Crisis Fund, that is money that has been raised by Talkeetna Bachelor Society. And we administer some of this fund. There are many different kinds of the money that the bachelors raise, you know, goes in lots of different directions. But we have money to be used for families in crisis. So it's expanded a little bit. But an example, some examples that we've used are the funds for are to pay for a taxi to get to either Wasilla or Anchorage, depending on where there's a bed in a shelter.
Right.
We have paid for tickets out of state if there is a safe place to go.
Like a family and, member,
you know,
or something.
Exactly. Yeah. We have, if there's no shelter space available, we could potentially pay for a room in a hotel until we can make other kinds of arrangements.
Right.
So that there's financial, you know, some financial help available. In order to access that financial help, you could talk with certainly anybody at the clinic, but, you know, with Kirsten, with me, with Shalise Jorgensen, our medical director, with the executive director, Melody West. You know, we can all access these funds and, you know, get them approved. We don't give money to the person directly. We would arrange for, the transportation to happen. We would pay for a room for a certain number of nights. We would, you know, pay for the ticket.
So yeah. It's short-term emergency type aid.
Or occasionally we have paid for more, a little bit longer term kinds of things. If, you know, families are in crisis and there's, you know, more need for services, even behavioral health.
Okay.
I am one person, and as you know, people are coming to know, I'm very, very busy, and we're trying to find, you know, other therapists to come in and work at the clinic. But, you know, I do not have an expertise in working with small children. So small children can be very affected by abuse in the home, and we have sometimes paid for services to children and getting them back and forth to Wasilla.
Okay, for some behavioral health.
So we would consider, you know, the requests, and if we don't feel that it kind of falls within, you know, the just the area that of families in crisis, we might say, nah, I'm not sure that that's it. But, you know, if it's a genuine need, we probably, you know, can really strongly consider it.
Okay.
So,
but I mean,
always ask is so what that, I'm saying.
That kind of easy, when you were talking about the financial side of it, you know, that maybe might make it a little bit easier for people.
Yeah. And if it's reported to police, there's also the Violent Crimes Compensation Fund, which can also help with things like relocating and, you know, first month's rent and some behavioral, they'll also pay for some behavioral health. So things like that. And another thing that, you know, people don't always think about, but it comes up a lot is, you know, the pets. What happens to my pet if I leave? I don't want my pet to be killed. And, you know, shelters are much more aware of this issue now because it was a really big barrier for people. And, you know, I know Alaska Family Services can make arrangements if you have pets, and so can Awake.
Okay. Yeah, well, especially in Alaska, people love their dogs.
Yeah, I think there's more dogs than people in some areas.
It feels that way sometimes, at least. Some neighborhoods around here, actually.
Yeah, definitely.
So the number to call if you want to join the conversation is 733-1200, or you can send an email to dj@ktna.org. We have gotten another email from Jock seeking to recognize the high school students for their the public service spots that they recorded that we've been airing here on KTNA. Those were funded by the Bachelor Society, at least in part. But yeah, the
Bachelor Society and Jessica Stevens Community Foundation really worked with them. They have done a marvelous job.
That's the Peer Helpers group.
That was, you know, that was last year, and you know, so I think those are, I don't know how long those spots are going to be running, but, you know, thank you for recognizing this. Exactly what we were talking about. I think that that's a very important piece. I mean, this is a group of kids that, you know, really worked hard on these spots. Right. And, you know, you never know how much of a difference they're going to make.
Right.
But, you know, you put them out there and they certainly can't hurt. You know, and I think that's really important. So thank you for acknowledging those kids.
Yeah, no, they did a great job. And like I said, you know, you were talking about getting to the young people, but these are the young people who are speaking up and speaking out and doing things like telling people what the hotline numbers are and stuff like that. You know, just giving that little bit of information that, hey, maybe might help someone, or at least plant the seed in somebody's head. we've got about 15 minutes left. And Cece, you mentioned something that I'd like to explore a little bit further. You talked about how abusive relationships affect children, and I wanted to touch on adverse childhood experiences, or ACEs, and the role that those play not only in domestic violence later in life, but just in overall behavioral and mental health. And so there's a broad there's a lot of categories of what falls under ACEs. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Well, I'm not the expert, but I can in general talk about, you know, the adverse childhood experiences. There's lots of studies about that. And I certainly, what I can't do is to List off the top of my head all of different childhood,
that's fine.
You know. But on the other hand, I think it's important. I mean, it is things like, did you ever experience, sexual abuse or assault in your
right.
life? Have you witnessed domestic violence? Have you lived in a family in which was excessive use of drugs or alcohol? Have you had a parent incarcerated? So things like that along those lines. So they're, obviously talking about experiences that impact children. What we know from all of the studies that are done, not only does that affect a child as they grow to adulthood, their mental health and behavioral health. I mean, we've talked in the past certainly about how if you have been abused as a child, sadly, you are far more likely
right.
to abuse than if you become an abuser than if you have not been abused. That's not to say if you have never been abused, you are not going to become an
right.
abuser.
It's just
statistically, it yeah. works out that way. You're modeling behavior that you know. But the other important point is that it's very clear, the studies are all showing that the more adverse childhood experiences a person has, the more it affects their physical health.
Hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
that, illnesses that are chronic, such as diabetes, such as high blood pressure, such as, obesity is not necessarily an illness, but it certainly can lead into many other, health factors. Depression, do we call that a mental illness or a physical illness? It's certainly both. So all of those things, play a part in it. So But the other part, since we're really trying to emphasize the positive, is the fact that there are impacts that are negative on a child, but there's also resilience. And what we really want to emphasize is let's look at what makes people resilient, so they can have experience some of those things, but still be okay as adults.
Okay. Sorry, we had a call coming in that AJ is fielding right now. So along those lines, we're talking about the ways that children are affected, and we've talked before about how, your overall health, not only in, I didn't know about the thing about chronic illnesses and things like
mm-hmm.
diabetes and that sort of thing, but that's interesting, and goes to show you how much your mental state can directly affect your body.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, that's incredible.
So I always say I don't know when it started that we sort of made this division at our neck somehow. Above the neck is called mental health and below the neck is physical health.
Sure.
Because your brain, there's not really a difference between
right.
that as an organ from your heart, from your lungs, from your liver. So, what happens to you affects your brain. Your brain affects the way all of the other organs work.
Wow.
So everything is really interconnected. So a lot of the work that I do is how do we use both parts of that? So we do a whole lot of, muscle relaxation, breathing, working to heal the mind by use of the body. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
In sort of thinking about it, when you have to endure pain, so whether it is physical pain from abuse, whether it is emotional pain or verbal pain, your experience of pain changes. Okay. So sometimes your threshold gets very high. So these are people oftentimes that are put themselves at risk because they don't necessarily feel the pain and they get adrenaline rushes. Sometimes you're so sensitive to it that any little bit of pain. So people, a huge problem now is chronic pain.
Right.
And I'm not trying to say that there is no such thing as, injury and chronic pain. What I am saying is that people's experience of pain is often very different based on their early experiences. you know, emotional experiences change what goes on in your brain, you know, and that stays with you.
Okay. We had a caller who left us a message here and said, oh, it's touching back on the trooper question, that we didn't lose coverage. We lost the station here. And then the caller said that it is the same coverage. And the troopers have told me that when I talked with Colonel Cockrell with the Alaska State Troopers, he said that he did also say that it would change and that response times could be longer. Mm-hmm. But there is generally on each shift a trooper around in the area. And I have actually seen them out on the road more than I used to, just because there's no base for them to be at here. So if they're in the area, they tend to be out and about on the roads a little bit more. So a little bit of clarification from a caller there. One thing before we go, and Cece, every time that you're on and we're talking about domestic violence, I think this is the third or fourth time at this point. But one thing that I always try to bring up, because even though a very high number of people will experience some form of violence in their life, there are a significant number of people who don't, or even if people have experienced things in the past, if later in life they see somebody else going through things, they may not necessarily know what to do. And we're talking, you know, emphasizing positive behaviors and things like that. You gave the example, Kirsten, of a very simple and easy thing you can do. But what are the options for someone on the outside? Because it can be hard to step into someone's, what you might perceive as someone's personal business, in air quotes.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, you know, just asking, are you okay? Are you safe? Is a opener. And if the person says, I absolutely don't want to talk about this, then stop asking them questions.
Okay.
You know, it's important to give the person control, because what's been taking away from them is control. So when you let them tell you at their own pace, and you know, if they ask for help, then absolutely try to find help for them. Or if you're not comfortable doing it, find someone else that is comfortable finding help for them. But just listening to a person can do amazing things, and just being supportive, not peppering them with a ton of questions, you know, just letting them guide it and putting it in their hands with how they want you to help them. Because if they do start telling you, that's a sign of trust. And even if it's not, you know, immediately leaving today, it's building a bridge.
Okay. That's interesting, because I think, you know, first instinct might be if you have a strong suspicion or even have seen something going on in someone's life and they tell you, I absolutely don't want to talk about it, I think the first instinct might be, well, come on, you know, but the loss of control is that's a very interesting point.
Yeah. And just saying, you know, when you're ready, I'm a safe person that you can talk to.
Okay.
And
so just
I will be there for you.
Leaving that door open.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a very important point. It's, you know, again, it's not assuming that they don't want to talk about it, so I'm not even going to bring it up. It's perfectly okay to bring it up. But as Kirsten said, let that person take control and say, when I want to talk about it. But you have opened a door, and, you know, that's a person, you know, that's safe, you know. So,
right.
So when and if, you know, or if and when they are ready to talk about it, they know, you know, at least I know this person, you know, mm-hmm. is safe. But just being quiet, you know, if you witnessed it, is not, you know, an okay thing. I remember, I don't know how long ago it was, there was a, I must have been on Facebook, a little back and forth, this was maybe almost a year ago, mm-hmm. you and I were both involved in it, Philip, about some of the, what should be, you know, there had been some kind of incident,
mm-hmm.
and you know, some of the people were saying, oh, no, don't talk about it. Don't speak about it. Don't, you know, just let it be, because that's their business. And you and I were saying, no, no, we should talk about it. It does happen, you mm-hmm. know, and
it happens here.
Yes, exactly. You know, and again, we tend to think about, you know, the big, huge events, you know, in which, you know, somebody just gets beaten up, you know, and it's very public and you can't hide it. You know, it's important to really emphasize that most of the stuff is not big, huge events.
Well, no, yeah, it's unlikely that it starts with mm-hmm. something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, I know Kirsten has had people say this too. Well, you know, it wasn't that big a deal. You know, I only got shoved. Well, that is a big deal. You know, it's not okay to shove somebody else. You know, I mean, I've joked for a while, but it is, you know, sad that, I don't know that this is true now, but for a while when I was working in a middle school, the way that the boys were showing the girls that they liked them was to hip check them into the lockers. You know, it's like, oh, you are mine, you know, and I thought, oh, okay, that's odd, but, you know, what are we teaching our right. kids? You know, but this was going on, this was, oh, you know, about 5 or 6 years ago, and I mm-hmm. think it was not just in the school that I was in. But it's those kinds of things, you know, what message are you trying to give? You know, that's not, you know, oh, that was just a joke. She knows I really like her. No, I don't think so.
It's an odd way of showing it.
But, you know, so again, it's noticing the little things. It's noticing, you know, and just saying, you know, I'm sorry that happened to you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, are you okay? Yes, you know, I think that's the biggest thing.
Yeah, it can be as easy as, are you okay?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then I do want to, you know, mention, because we've talked about prevention, but even starting earlier on, and one of the things that last year the kids did, and, you know, I don't really know what the plans are this year, but the peer leaders went into the elementary school mm-hmm. and worked with the younger kids on bullying. So a lot of the anti-bullying, you know, campaign is really the beginning prevention kind of thing. You know, it's about teaching the kids, teaching people to treat each other with respect. And of course, I can't not bring up the Choose Respect,
sure.
you know,
yeah.
type of event that we will have in the end of April, end of March, beginning of April. Kirsten and I were talking about it. I don't know whether it's still an official state program, you know, that was the previous governor's.
Right, that
know,
was a Parnell administration.
You know, his
thing.
His administration. And I don't think there's quite as much, you know, of course, there's not as much funding. But we here in Talkeetna will definitely have our Choose Respect activities. And we will, again, be having a walk. We will, again, do flags and send them up to the mountain. And I don't know what all else we'll do, but we'll figure it out. So if anybody wants to work on Choose Respect,
okay.
you know, let, you know, talk to Kirsten or myself.
Okay, great. Well, you know, we've just got a couple minutes left, and you've both mentioned, you know, contacting that your people who are potentially available, and there's also help at the Willow Clinic. So how do people get in touch if they are in a situation where they think they might need some help?
Well, I think to remember, the clinic has a answering service that goes all night long. So if a person called in the middle of the night, they would be answered by the answering service. Mm-hmm. The answering service then would contact the provider on call, and they would work with a person and try to figure out, you know, what's the best course of action, you know, at that point in time. I might be called, Shalise might be called, we might call Kirsten, but she has a little one at home, so she would not be our first choice of in the middle of the night. But we would certainly try to work with a person, so don't hesitate, you okay. know, to call. It's a somewhat awkward system, you know, after hours, but we certainly are responsive.
There are still people there.
You can always call the main clinic number, the 733-2273 number. Ask for Kirsten in Talkeetna. Ask for Shannon in Willow. Ask for myself. You know, anybody. You know, people can always reach us, maybe not instantly, but, you know, and certainly I want to emphasize, if it's an emergency, dial 911. Don't call the clinic. You know, because we can't do anything right. instantaneously. We've talked about the fact that, you know, the troopers are not necessarily available instantaneously, but they
never
are
have
there.
Been.
They are there, and they will respond.
Right.
You know, and if it's a medical emergency, again, don't call the clinic.
Right, call 911. Well, it sounds like the take-home message is speak up, say something, both about positive and negative. That's about all the time we've got for today. My guests have been Cece Schoenberger and Kirsten Stroll from the Sunshine Community Health Center. If you missed part of the show or want to listen again, Sioux Valley Voice will rebroadcast at 7 p.m. tonight, or you can listen online anytime at ktna.org. Until next time, I'm Philip Manning. Thanks for listening.